Hey yo, one aviation topic that impacts just about anyone who's ever been on an airplane is turbulence. Pilots and passengers alike experience apprehension about this phenomenon, so today we're going to break it down, explain what causes turbulence, and address the question of whether or not it's dangerous, so stay tuned. This is episode 31 of the Plaid Pilot Podcast, and I'm your host, Todd Weld. I am glad to be back. It's been a while. Between illnesses, it seems like everyone's been sick, having to go out of town for a family emergency, been teaching some ground school and flying again for my commercial certificate. It's just been super crazy. At this point, I've kind of accepted that doing a regular weekly thing is probably unrealistic, but I do really enjoy doing the show and all that. So I'm going to keep at it with the understanding that it won't be released super regularly at this point, maybe down the road. But we'll see. And I know not releasing regularly isn't great for growing the community, but I'd rather release irregularly and, you know, keep going than just quit. So that's just how it's going to be for now. It is really good getting back to the show, and I absolutely appreciate you guys coming back to listen. You know, without you guys, I'd just be talking into the void, and that isn't nearly as much fun as talking with y'all. So last time I was on, I announced the creation of Plaid Aviation. And as y'all know, I've had my advanced ground instructor certificate from the FAA for a little while now. I earned it middle to end of last year, but I've turned that into a small business. I'm officially offering ground instruction as Plaid Aviation. Right now, I have a couple students that I meet with weekly and a few more that I've done some one-off lessons with, just helping them out on a topic maybe they're struggling with a little bit. And the struggle with ground training in general is that, you know, most people are doing online ground schools these days, which is great, but the online ground schools, generally, they just teach each topic one way. And if you're struggling with a particular aspect of a topic, they can't really identify where the disconnect is and then get you back on the right track. So that kind of forces you to get with your flight instructor, which absolutely isn't a bad thing, but many, if not most CFIs, they don't really care for the ground stuff so much. A lot of them, they're just trying to get their hours, get to the airlines, and that leaves you paying somewhere from $60 to $80 an hour to be taught by somebody who would rather be doing something else. And I want to be clear, I'm not knocking CFIs. The way the industry is, instructing is one of the easiest ways that you can build time and experience, and most of them are doing the best that they can and making the most of that time building. But even when they're giving it their all, you're always going to get more out of a lesson when it's coming from someone who enjoys what they're doing, someone who wants to be there. So this is kind of my goal with Plaid Aviation. I want to offer a more enjoyable, more effective, and more affordable option for ground training than you might find from your typical CFI who's just trying to get to the airlines. And I'm also building a website. I'm hoping to provide lots of training resources as well as an online community on there for pilots and aviation enthusiasts. To kind of network and talk about training stuff. It's not live yet, but if you want, you can go ahead and get signed up to be notified. As soon as the website goes live, you can check that out at plaidaviation.com. There's a form on there, add your name and email, and I'll put you on the list. And that's plaidaviation.com. In the meantime, if you have a flight training question you'd like me to talk about on the show, or you just want to reach out and say hi or whatever, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at todd@plaidaviation.com or send me a DM on Instagram @theplaidpilot. All right, so on today's episode, we're going to be talking about turbulence. Why, you might ask? Well, there's a few reasons. For one, understanding turbulence is a requirement for your private instrument and commercial pilot check rides. You need to know about it. You need to understand it to become a pilot at any level. It's just one of those things we need to know about. But turbulence is also one of the few semi-technical aviation topics that concerns non-pilots, possibly even more than pilots. There's a lot of people who are nervous flyers, whether on large passenger airplanes or general aviation airplanes or both. You know, we've talked about my wife is definitely one of them. She does not like being in the air. And that's not an uncommon thing at all. It's a pretty common occurrence for people to feel that way. I actually received a message from a high school friend a while back now asking me about turbulence. Again, nervous flyer, mainly due to turbulence. And I did my best to kind of explain it over text. And with, you know, with a lot of aviation topics, it's just too much to describe in a helpful way over a text message. So hopefully this can be something helpful to listen to for anybody who doesn't like turbulence, whether it's a new pilot just getting into flying and they're still not comfortable with the bumps, or anyone else who just hates when their airline trip gets a little too bumpy. So it should be a little something for everyone here on this episode. The first thing I'll address is the burning question I know is coming from the non-pilots and new pilots alike. Is turbulence dangerous? And the short answer is no. between the rigorous standards that modern airliners are built to and advances in weather observation and forecasting technology that kind of allow areas of severe or extreme turbulence to be avoided in almost all cases, there hasn't been a mishap with an airliner where turbulence was a major contributing factor in multiple decades, certainly not in the 21st century. And in 2021 alone, U.S. passengers flew a combined total of over 570 billion, with a B, billion, miles, and that's a whole lot of flying. So multiply that by dozens and dozens of years with no mishaps. They have this turbulence thing figured out. It is not a danger. So if that's all you need to know, you're free to go now. Get on that airplane for your next vacation, enjoy the flight, knowing that even if it gets a little bumpy, the airplane is in no danger. Now, you might point to a couple times in the past several years where a passenger has been injured due to turbulence. May have seen that on the news or something, and it has happened. This has been due to a failure to follow instructions, though. This isn't an aircraft issue. This is a people issue. I will talk about that. I'll talk about how you can avoid a similar thing for you. And I'll also talk about where you can sit on the plane to reduce the turbulence that you feel on your trip. So stay tuned if you're interested in that. But first, let's talk about what actually causes turbulence. Now, turbulence is caused by a variety of factors. The most common types of turbulence are caused by convective currents, obstructions on the ground, storms, frontal activity, and the jet stream at higher altitudes. So generally speaking, turbulence is going to be a lot more common near the ground. For a lot of your general aviation aircraft, that's probably going to constitute a lot, if not all, of the flight. So kind of bad news for them. For the airlines, they get away from the ground pretty quick, but they can experience these types of turbulence on takeoff, on landing, and then, of course, the higher altitudes. They can experience some of that higher altitude stuff. So obstructions, we'll talk about obstructions first. Obstructions are common on the ground, obviously. As a matter of fact, almost all obstructions are attached to the ground or part of the ground. And this can be buildings, it can be trees, it can be hills or mountains, anything that disrupts the airflow near the ground. Remember, air is a fluid, very similar to water, just a lot less dense, a lot harder to see, but it still behaves as a fluid. So I'm sure you've seen how water in a stream or a creek, it moves over rocks, moves over other obstructions, and it kind of burbles up when it does this, right? And you can see if it's a shallow stream, how it almost makes the water look bumpy. And if you were in a tiny boat, it would certainly feel bumpy going over that. And that's basically what the air does as the wind blows around buildings or trees and over hills and mountains. It kind of churns up the air and it makes it feel bumpy. And in the same way that, you know, your faster streams and rivers react more, I guess, aggressively, for lack of a better word, around the obstructions, the wind does the same thing as it picks up. So the air gets a lot more churned up by the buildings and the hills and mountains when the wind speed is higher. So it's not a guarantee, but generally the windier it is, the bumpier it's going to be as well. Now, another cause at lower levels is convective currents. Now, convective currents occur when the sun heats the earth, causes the air to heat up, and of course, hot air is less dense and it rises. So generally, the hotter and more unstable the air is, the more pronounced these currents are going to be. But when you're flying along and you hit a patch of air that's rising faster than the parcel of air that you were just in, it could feel a little uncomfortable. You know, we call that an updraft. And then obviously, when you come out of the other side, almost stepping off a moving elevator, it's going to get a little bumpy again. And that's just the nature of flying through air that's not uniform. It's got a bunch of changing things going in. It's a very dynamic environment. Speaking of not being uniform, frontal activity is a great example of that. Air masses they're generally made up of air that's similar throughout. The temperature, density, humidity, wind, all that stuff, it's pretty similar within the air mass. Now, where two air masses meet is called a front, and flying through a front almost guarantees a bumpy ride. And it's for a very similar reason, like we were just talking about. When you fly across the front, you're moving from one air mass to another, and you're likely to experience a change in density. And, you know, with that will come some wind shear. And wind shear, it's basically a change in wind speed or direction. If you hear that term, that's what it means. But it'd be like almost walking sideways through the gym from treadmill to treadmill with the treadmills on. You know, if they were close together and they were all moving at the same speed, you'd probably figure out a pretty smooth way that you could sidestep from treadmill to treadmill and keep things pretty smooth. You'd have some pretty constant conditions from one to the next, and it would make for a smooth transition. However, somebody cranks one of those up, or maybe turns it around, has it going the opposite direction, Now, all of a sudden, that transition is going to be pretty jarring. And it's kind of the same deal with the airplane, going into a different air mass where the wind may be coming from a different direction or different wind speed, anything like that. It's not inherently dangerous, but it can feel uncomfortable. And part of that, especially for those flying in an airliner, is that you don't have the visual reference for your brain to really understand how your body is moving. You know, at best, you have a little window to look out, and 2/3 of passengers don't even get that. So your brain is taking these inputs from your inner ear, and it's trying to fill in the blanks about what's going on. So what might be a drop of a few feet, your brain interprets as falling 100 feet or more. You know, it's blowing everything kind of out of proportion. In IFR training, we talk about the elevator illusion, which is where an updraft or a downdraft can actually trick your brain into thinking that, you know, either your pitch attitude is way too high, or maybe you're in a nosedive, when neither of those things are true. Your brain's just doing the best that it can with incomplete information. So keep that in mind. Usually the turbulence that you feel on the airplane, it's going to feel a lot worse to you as a passenger than it actually is. Now, thunderstorms are one thing that can actually cause some dangerous turbulence. You know, we talk about how, for the most part, turbulence isn't dangerous. Thunderstorms can create a dangerous situation. And this isn't really a problem for the airliners because they can just go around the storms. They can fly at altitudes that are, you know, higher than the storms are climbing up to when they're in cruise flight. So this is most often a problem for the small general aviation airplanes that, for one, they don't have a team on the ground keeping them away from the storms, and they don't have the ability to fly over the storms. Now, the updrafts and downdrafts inside of a big thunderstorm, it can cause significant structural damage to small airplanes, can literally tear the airplanes apart. So it's obviously best to just avoid large storms altogether, or thunderstorms in general, altogether in a small general aviation airplane. As a matter of fact, the FAA recommends leaving at least 20 miles between you and a storm, and you should never try to use your onboard weather like NEXRAD or anything like that to try and dodge storm cells. There can actually be a 15 or 20 minute delay from the time that the images are taken until you're seeing it in the cockpit. So it can be great situational awareness when you're in flight and you're kind of trying to plan what you're going to do. But if you're in the soup, you know, in the clouds, trying to fly between embedded cells, it can be a recipe for disaster. So please, please, please don't do that. It's just not something you want to do. Now, you're usually going to experience some level of turbulence inside of clouds, even clouds that aren't housing thunderstorms, just because of the nature of clouds. But it generally doesn't pose any risk, even to the small airplanes. It's really those thunderstorms that we're concerned with. And again, the airliners have the ability to fly around them if they're at lower altitudes. And by the time they're cruising, most thunderstorms don't get up that high. If they do, they're pretty easy to fly around. Now, clear air turbulence, this is the most likely culprit for bumps felt at altitude on an airliner. Technically, as the name suggests, this is any turbulence that occurs in air outside of the clouds, but usually when we're talking about clear air turbulence, it's related to the jet streams. Now, the jet streams, you may or may not know, they're basically these super fast, almost like a river of wind in the sky, pretty high altitude, moving really fast, and a lot of times what will have happen is that that stream is going the fastest in the middle of that stream, and then as you go out away from it, the air slows down a little bit, so you get a little bit of what you could consider wind shear, and then sometimes it almost loops back on itself, and when it does that, you can get into this situation where the wind is getting really churned up by that movement. Another common thing is that the jet stream will actually get close to a different jet stream, gets in that vicinity, and having both of those there running slightly different directions or whatever, that can really turn the air up as well. Can make things pretty uncomfortable. Usually it's not a concern for general aviation because we don't really fly that high. And, you know, the jet streams are tracked by meteorologists to kind of allow airlines to miss the most significant clear air turbulence. So again, it's great to be aware of, but it doesn't really pose a real threat to passengers on the airlines. So wake turbulence is another kind of turbulence you might experience, and this one really deserves its own episode, so we're not going to go into a whole lot of detail, but essentially, you know, the same way that a boat leaves a wake in the water, planes can leave a wake in the air. And when you fly through that wake, you feel the bumps, just like in a boat on the lake. If you are in a boat and you go over another boat's wake, you're going to feel that bump. Well, same thing happens in the air. There really are a lot of similarities between air and water. in a lot of times just thinking about how water behaves and trying to translate that to how air might behave can kind of help you visualize that a little bit better. So flying through the wake of a large plane in a very small plane, it can absolutely be dangerous. Flying general aviation airplanes is something you need to be aware of. Like I said, deserves its own episode. At some point will likely be its own episode, but that's a discussion for another day. When a large plane flies through the wake, you feel a good bump, you're going to know you hit it, but it's really nothing to worry about. It's not a dangerous situation. So now we've talked about what causes turbulence, let's talk about what you should do if you find yourself flying on a very bumpy day, or what your pilot will do if you're the passenger on a bumpy day. So every airplane has either a turbulence penetration speed, a maneuvering speed, or they may have both. But this is a speed that once you get below that speed, it's been determined that turbulence won't damage the aircraft. The faster you're going, the more stress and more load that those bumps and those pitching movements can put on the airframe. So the engineers and the certifying officials at the FAA, they've determined what airspeed is going to prevent damage from occurring. And every pilot's going to know what that airspeed is for their aircraft. So you just slow down to the safe speed and you're gold, mostly. You also want to avoid fighting the airplane. If you take pride in precision flying, you're going to always want to be exactly on altitude and airspeed all of the time, but this is a time when that's just not going to work for you. You have to just do your best, try and maintain a constant level flight attitude, and you're going to have to accept those changes in altitude. If you fight it, you risk stressing the aircraft, you risk letting your airspeed get out of hand. Remember, we get too fast, then it can cause damage to the airplane. So if you're flying IFR or maybe, you know, you have flight following, if you hit a lot of turbulence, you can always request a block altitude. You can let ATC know that things are getting pretty bumpy, maybe throw a PI rep in there, help other pilots out, let them know what to expect. But just letting them know that you can't maintain that constant altitude with the level of turbulence, and they'll help you out. But those are the main things. Reduce your speed, get below your either maneuvering speed or turbulence penetration speed, and maintain a level flight attitude rather than a constant altitude. Now, I was listening to a podcast a while back. I don't remember the name, but if I can find it, I'll link it in the show notes so you can go check it out. It was a great episode, but they were talking about turbulence, and there was this pilot with 18 or 20,000 hours he'd flown all over the world, think every continent besides Antarctica. And he was talking about how rare, severe, or extreme turbulence is. Now, the FAA breaks turbulence up into light, moderate, severe, and extreme. And they have criteria for each of those categories. And he was sharing to let everyone know, you know, people will talk about how severe the turbulence might have been on their flight, but that's more their perception than what was actually occurring. And he was sharing to let everyone know just how rare really bad turbulence is. So in his 18 or 20,000 hours, and of course, this is kind of anecdotal because this is one pilot's career. But in his 18 or 20,000 hours, he said that he got light turbulence, at least a little bit, on probably every flight. It's just one of those things that happens. You catch a few bumps now and again. For the most part, you don't even think about it. Now, moderate turbulence is much more rare. I think he said maybe one out of every 200 flights, he experienced moderate turbulence. So you think about that. You do a lot of traveling. Maybe you've done 200 flights in your life, you know, commercial flights. I know I'm not anywhere near 200 commercial flights in my life that I've been a passenger on. But he said maybe one out of every 200 of the flights that he was on, he would experience some moderate turbulence. For severe turbulence, I think he said once or twice in his, you know, 18,000 hour career that he actually felt severe turbulence, and he'd never experienced extreme turbulence. So that's how rare this stuff really is. So most likely what you are perceiving as severe turbulence is likely on the upper end of light turbulence or maybe somewhere in the moderate range, but would be incredibly rare on an airline for you to actually experience severe turbulence. And even at this severe level, the aircraft isn't in any danger for an airliner. Now, I promise we talk about those people who've been hurt on a flight that hit turbulence, we've heard about on the news in the recent past. So it all comes down to following directions. These injuries were from people walking around the cabin with the seatbelt sign on, either hurting themselves or falling on other passengers. If the seatbelt sign is on, just stay seated, okay? It's the only way turbulence might hurt you in a big airplane is if you refuse to follow the seatbelt sign and you're up walking around when it's on, okay? So follow the rules, you'll be okay. That one is 100% human error. And finally, if you want the smoothest ride, There's not a whole lot that you can do, but try and pick a seat right over the wing, maybe slightly in front of the wing. It won't completely reduce the bumps, but on a lot of aircraft, sitting in that area, it puts you near the center of gravity, which generally moves less in turbulent conditions, at least when it comes to like the pitching moments. So that's a small thing that you can do if you're really nervous about flying. Pick your seat, pick those locations, and it'll help out a little bit. So hopefully now, whether you're a nervous traveler, a student pilot working through some new experiences, or just wanting a refresher for an upcoming check ride or written test, hopefully you were able to take something good from today's episode. Well, that's all for this week. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the show. To make sure you never miss an episode, be sure to follow the podcast on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. I hope to catch you next week, but until then, y'all stay safe out there, keep the dirty side down, the pointy end forward, and as my wife always says, fluffy landings.